Okay, here we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
So it'll be about half a minute to see.
I'm going to give you some writing by Gordon Duff.
Okay.
You're going to like this.
That's our theme. Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul Borzola on the 11th of November, the 11th month of the year, and interesting birthdays and an interesting death or two today. And, of course, our theme, I was going to use some military music. I've got a bad line, so all that distortion you may hear, I haven't been able to get Pactel to get this straightened out. But anyways, I hope we're coming through loud and clear. And the March to the Scaffold by Berlioz is appropriate considering the horrible deaths at Fort Hood and our military personnel who have been killed around the world. And our guest today is a great man who also played baseball with Ted Williams. Art Burnclaw, he'll be on in about a minute. I am just going to run through the interesting birthdays today. These are people who are in Congress and who, one's dead, two are dead, but they are affecting the legislation, and I'll probably vote for the Obamacare or Pelosi care and the Copenhagen deal where they're going to have world government. So Barbara Boxer, the senator from California, she's running for re-election, or she may. She's up for re-election anyway. She was born in New York, and she's a senior U.S. senator from California. And we have Pete Stark, a banker, who has a very foul mouth. And he was born today, and he was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Also, he's dead now, Senator William Proxmire, who used to go after the Pentagon and government waste with his Golden Fleece Awards. And then a Republican from Pennsylvania, this guy's dead also, Senator Hugh Scott. And my favorite general, General George S. Patton, was born today. He also shares, it's interesting, three of the greatest generals in World War II were all Scorpios, born in November, George Patton, Bernard Law Montgomery, a field marshal, and also Erwin Rommel. There may be some others lesser, but those are the three most prominent. Also in the actors, two great actors, Robert Ryan from Chicago, who was The Billy Budd was one of his best films. He was also in The Battle of the Bulge. And Pat O'Brien, who played a lot of Irish characters in various movies. And a great movie, Bridge on the River Kwai, which has been controversial lately because some of the segments in it were not factual. But Sam Spiegel, the guy who produced that film, he was born in 1901. And those of you who hate Puritanism, in 1620, the Mayflower Compact was signed. That's the Puritans who came to these shores and caused no end of problems. And Cole Porter wrote in his song Anything Goes, which is San Francisco's theme song, that Plymouth Rock should have landed on the Pilgrims instead of the Pilgrims on it. And I'm going to bring in our great guest, Art Burnclaw, who's done more for veterans than any other civilian that I know in my lifetime. Welcome, Art.
Thank you very much, Peter. And I won't speak much about myself at all, but you're right. I did. I was with Ted Williams. He in the Red Sox Birmingham team. Ted was a coordinator in our camp. He was playing left field for the Boston Red Sox, and right in center field was a man who tutored me personally, the late great Dom DiMaggio. And this is going back to 1956, where I was leading the Southern Association in stolen bases, and my baseball coach said we had five people faster than him, but we know Burnclaw. We're not surprised that he's leading the league in stolen bases because he used to be running from the cops all the time.
perpetrators you were wearing.
For those people who are veterans and some who are not, happy Veterans Day. And it's a very momentous occasion. I spent a good part of my life out in Southeast Asia. And previously to that, I was in the other war out in Korea. So I've spent my time and there, more than my time. And a lot of you people are going to want to contact me because I'm a real veterans advocate. Not like the bunch over there, like the DAV and that bunch of clowns that have their hands in the VA's pocket. We help the veterans. So the best way to contact me is if you're doing it by phone, copy this number down. It's 631 area code. 474-4261, and all the calls you make to me will be returned, guarantee. If you want to write me, best way to write me would be Veterans for Constitutional Law, comma, Limited, LTD is okay, Veterans for Constitutional Law, comma, Limited, at 112 Jefferson Avenue, and that's in Port Jefferson, New York. 112 Jefferson Avenue, Port Jefferson, New York, and our zip code is 11777. That's a full house. 11777. And any communications you make with me, we will get back to you for sure. And I want to talk tonight about the VA and veterans of the Vietnam War who are the victims of four decades of betrayal. The VA, many people think, is a benevolent organization. That couldn't be further from the truth. They have an agenda, and the agenda is to do the veterans out of whatever they can in the way of benefits. Originally, they were meant to be our advocates, and over the years, our advocate has developed into our biggest adversary. Only 4% of all veterans, that's from all wars, who apply for disability compensation from the VA or benefits actually are paid. The rest are either turned down or they string them along for years and years until the veteran gets disgusted and quits out of frustration or he expires. This is the plan of the VA. Pure and simple, outlast the veteran. Now, I want to thank Gordon Duff, who's a staff writer over in L.A. I believe it's the Times or the News. And he's giving me all these ideas, and we got this. He put this together to help us with this. And the new Obama GI Bill just kicked in. Now, vets can get massive funding for college, enough to live like rich frat boys. Yes, that much. They can give their benefits to family members or use them to not only go to school, but to live, eat, buy textbooks, drive a car, all things that were denied to Vietnam veterans. Now, what did Vietnam vets get? They got $173 a month, and what was that to pay for? Living expenses, books, tuition, supplies, fees, in fact, everything. What did it pay for? It paid rent on a shared bedroom in an old house and bus tokens. When I went to school out in L.A., there were nine of us living in a room and a half on a five-floor walk-up, and we didn't have beds or couches. We had sleeping bags, and we did whatever we could. Now, who paid the rest? Vietnam vets worked, most of them full-time, some with two jobs, often having to miss classes because of jobs. They borrowed thousands and thousands of dollars and left college in debt. Books? They were checked out from the library or never bought at all. Food? Whatever you could buy for a buck a day. Usually canned hash or beefaroni. No counseling, no disability checks to PTSD or TBI treatment. Just poverty, overwork, and the struggle to find jobs while being banned from most companies and denied employment. Preference? The price. Devastation. Banned from mainstream service organizations because of our undeclared war, we stood alone. Now, few of us can stand at all. 40 years ago, the big news was Woodstock. 500,000 Americans were fighting one of the most brutal wars in our history under the worst conditions of any war we had fought, and nobody cared. There was still a draft designed to protect rich kids, the kind whose families could get them into the National Guard or reserve slots that poor kids weren't allowed in. Sometimes it was connections, sometimes cash payments. Remember the National Guard wig? Guard members would push their ponytails up under the skinhead wigs to attend dress. Now, how many of these folks are in Congress now? Dozens. As with other wars, most Vietnam vets didn't make it to college. Medical care from the VA was almost non-existent, although not tens, but hundreds of thousands of sick and wounded came home. The worst of them died of hospital infections or neglect. I saw amputees stored in hallways and basements in VA hospitals in unbelievable filth. I will remember this all my life, and I still get sick walking into a VA hospital or clinic. They wonder why PTSD vets don't continue treatment. The VA made our PTSD worse, much worse, and for many of us, it's as much a part of the nightmares as the war itself. Most who started college didn't finish. Fighting untreated PTSD, working, many supporting families, and paying for an education with insultingly little GI Bill support made it impossible for most. As many vets made it to prison as made it to college. Others lived under bridges and paper boxes and cardboard boxes and were in and out of jail. Alcohol, drugs, suicide, in numbers well beyond our current national scandal, was the norm, not the exception. Now, why should the government have helped? The debt was owed. Wounded troops and PTSD and traumatic brain injuries, that was TBI that I mentioned before, traumatic brain injuries, our wounds are supposed to be cared for. Even those with physical wounds were warehoused and as many killed off as possible. But for the others, treatment was often barbaric. Our GI Bill for Vietnam was a gutted version, thanks to Sonny Montgomery, the head of the VA, actually the head of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, and they called him Mr. VA. It was a gutted version of the one that World War II vets had. Those vets controlled the service organizations that denied Vietnam veterans membership and advised the Veterans Administration on policy. Policy: ignore Vietnam vets, pay them nothing, disrespect their service and sacrifice, block their funds, push them aside, and this is what happened. As more and more Vietnam vets died, tens of thousands of them, even early on, nothing was done. There were no studies, no votes on a new GI Bill, nor any investigations. All we got were movies like Rambo, with vets shown as cartoon morons, criminals, or dangerous psychopaths. Vet bashing was an industry in America. Veterans, real combat veterans, continued to make up the population of prisons, homeless shelters, county jails, and to take up the lowest paying jobs. Military retirees, most with no combat experience in Vietnam, as the war was fought on a daily basis by only the lowest ranks, got the post office jobs and other federal employment. We call them double dippers. Combat vets from Vietnam suffered malnutrition on a massive scale. Not even aging sea rations were available, and troops often lived on less than 500 calories a day for weeks at a time. There were no hot meals, no fresh foods of any kind, no fruit, no vegetables, no milk, nothing. Vets returned with their teeth falling out and generally deteriorated health. Agent Orange, Agent Orange. Huge numbers of vets came home with a skin condition now called chloracne. This was followed by migraine headaches and neurological symptoms that sometimes resembled Parkinson's disease. Then came the diabetes and cancers. Vets began dying, although victims of a plague. Our answer? America looked away. We ignored it as we did with Gulf War illness. Half the Agent Orange diseases may still be unrecognized for treatment today, and the ones on the list weren't admitted until so many died it no longer mattered. How are Agent Orange vets with cancer treated? Most weren't diagnosed, and when they were, the VA used the cheapest and worst treatments available. Friends of mine that survived sold their homes to pay for cancer treatment or had advanced treatments because of jobs with health insurance. How many had cancer? We will never be told. My first fatal cancer diagnosis was 1995. Money? The average E2-E3 combat soldier in Vietnam made between $7 and $8 a day. less than 10% of the pay of current troops. Out of this money, they had to buy uniforms, toiletries, and often food. Troops returned from war totally broke. Today's veterans are sometimes having disability claims held up for more than a year. Veterans are now on PTSD disability at 20 years old. 20 years old. Many Vietnam veterans are only being diagnosed now. My best guess is the average PTSD disability finding for a Vietnam veteran happens at, believe it or not, 58 years old. That's the stalling the VA does, not at 20. If anyone can prove me wrong, please do so. You've got my number to call me. The average time from onset to treatment has been over 20 years, and from treatment to disability compensation, another over 10 years, and some for 20 years or more. PTSD vets seldom have families or can seldom keep them. PTSD vets are unemployable, with some holding dozens of jobs over the years with long periods of unemployment. This tears families apart and crushes children. What was the government supposed to do? These vets needed treatment and the disability compensation. Current vets are now fighting successfully to get for life the day they leave the service. This would have given the families a living income, health insurance, excellent college assistance for children, and much more. Instead, it caused a generation of suffering not only from undiagnosed PTSD, but from tens of thousands with undiagnosed Agent Orange illness and the related birth defects, only some of which are even admitted to decades later. Who would die first, the vet or his child? How do we find and help the combat vets of Vietnam who were screwed over? The biggest place to look is easy. Buy a shovel. The next best tool, a lie detector. Chances are most of the Rambo types you've been running into all your lives are total liars or in the Alabama National Guard or even in Vietnam, usually working in an office. All veterans that served in-country have issues with Agent Orange and other problems crossing the line through every MOS. That's a military occupational specialty. Combat vets? These were the stepchildren of the military. They were brought in to be used up and discarded. Enlistees who opted for 4 years or more were able to negotiate non-combat options, and most did. Thus, a four-year enlistee with a fifth-grade education could work in intelligence, and a college grad, engineer, teacher, or pre-law with a two-year enlistment would be a grunt. If this doesn't explain how the military got the way it is and how it works, I don't know what does. Getting food to combat units was never a priority. Getting uniform, weapons, and ammunition wasn't either. Boots and body armor were picked up off the ground, discarded by rotating, wounded, or the dead. Here's a good pair of pants, only a few holes. See if you can get the blood out of them. This was good training for going to college on GI Bill. There is responsibility for fixing the lives of grown children raised in poverty, denied insurance, educational benefits, or a stable family. It is a problem. Yes, of course. Should it be done? Yes. Today is decades late, but it's not too late. Veteran service organizations. It was all about hair. Vets came back from Vietnam and grew hair, beards, and did everything to be accepted by their peers. Acceptance by the older generation was hopeless. Old always resent young, add hundreds of movies, TV shows, and the endless stories of baby killer vets. And the old lived in terror of Vietnam veterans. African Americans must have felt some relief about this. VSOs were all about old people. That's the Veteran Service Organization. The Vietnam vets, guys in their 50s, were old. These were the people who ran the VSOs, and they were jealous, resentful, and afraid. Being young in 1969 meant you were having sex. The kegger orgy seen in every movie, veteran and outlaw biker, meant the same to them. Funny thing, veterans have now taken on the garb of the outlaw bikers as their own. Veterans also competed for funding, with hundreds of thousands of undiagnosed World War II and Korean War PTSD victims suffering from years of cigarettes and booze and all the related illnesses. The VA was built around serving a clientele that was half rural, uninsured, and half Skid Row bum. VSOs worked hard to see that no effort was made to make room for tens of thousands of seriously wounded veterans who had been subjected to years of brutal combat. A third, much lower priority of veteran, was established behind the Skid Row bum. This was the worst wounded vet, many multiple amputees or nearly unrecognizable from burns. Don't see many of these folks around anymore. Surprise, surprise. How long could someone in this condition survive in a hospital that belonged in Albania or Somalia? Were they this bad? Yes, they were. Those who know them well will never forget. What is unique about the abuse of the Vietnam veteran is that it's gone on for so long. Rather than things getting better, the current war is making them even worse. Our volunteer army, less and less volunteer and more economic refugee, eats up funds. Throwing money at war, done for profit, not support of the troops, is America's biggest racket. Troops are fed, overfed, and have military marvels helping them that many now can't even imagine. We also find our new troops unemployed, dead of suicide, homeless, or serving in combat afraid of losing the only job available, while wounded or driven to mental instability. Is this a reason to crush the remaining Vietnam vets who have suffered for so long? Is buying an army for our crazy adventures in a land of oil and opium an excuse for more murder and betrayal? Yes, it seems so, because that's exactly what is being done now in Afghanistan and Iraq. Are current troops responsible? Of course not. If I had been offered food, I would have eaten. If we could have had helicopters or moderately good body armor, I might have worn it. Maybe not. PlayStation and internet? Yes, in a damn minute, along with any air conditioning I could find. Blame? Not the troops. Blame? Not even a government. Blame Americans, willing to live as though nothing can touch them while others suffer in their name. Christ wasn't the only one. Blasphemy, maybe. But more than Christ has been crucified to cover the sins of the many. Do we owe just the Vietnam vets? We owe them mostly, but we'll never be able to pay enough or undo the horrors wrought. We pay $4,500 for a junk car. Those are the clunkers. And hundreds of billions to crooked banks and health insurance companies whose management live like Arab sheiks on taxpayer welfare. What would I do if the government sent me $1 million reparation, part of what they owe? Could I buy back one day of suffering, my own illness, watching my friends die, or seeing families do without? There are things we can do. We can pass on real GI Bill benefits to our children, even those over 30 who still now have to go back to school and survive in the economic nightmare America has become. All we ever cared about was them anyway. Should grandchildren be helped? Of course. Vietnam caused generations of poverty and suffering, all directly due to the criminal misconduct of our government, the disdain of our people, and the greed of our military-industrial complex. Is this a debt really owed? No debt is owed more, and no group is more deserving. Not current troops, not people wanting new pickup trucks, not wealthy bankers worried about keeping the pool at their summer home in top conditions with bailout money. We took a generation and murdered them. It was a holocaust. Vets fought for education, jobs, and to have a decent life for themselves and their families. How did we help them? Doing nothing at all would have been an improvement. No medical care is better than systematic euthanasia thinly veiled as criminal neglect. Decades of insults, lies, deceit, and every cheap administrative ploy and dodge possible has not gone unnoticed. We all know it, and we all see it, and we're not forgetting any of it. None of us are robbing banks or running around the woods playing militia. The scandal sheets love talking about it, but it's simply not true. We are going to continue trying to look after each other, our families, and even the current troops and new vets. It is all we know, and we are all too old to become anything different. We were brave and loyal then and aren't likely to change. Many of us are broken, sick, racked with pain, and many dying. Not just us, but our brothers from the Gulf War and the newer generations who are kids to us. Not just kids, but our kids. Anger and neglect have not made us less American and more Wall Street or country club. Check your history. This is how we spent 40 years. Gandhi could use some of us as examples. Some of us joined the VSOs, some to change them, some because Post chose to stick by them, and some because there was no place else to go. Thus far, the VSOs, that's the Veteran Service Organizations, are still dumb, sometimes harmful and blind. That may change, but most of us won't live long enough to see it. Government, we've lost hope here. The heroes of the past have been replaced by the most deceitful and spineless Congress in our history. There are lions there. Decent people serve. But the real power lies outside the halls and in the back rooms where packets of money move in and honor is placed aside. Reparations? Why pay debts easily forgotten to people who are dying anyway? Is honor worth it? Is the lesson worth paying for? Is the real reason to save families, not only families, but the most deserving families in America? Victims? These are victims of not a natural disaster or attack, but of hate, fear, neglect, and dishonor. Not by a few, but by all. Every one of us. Nobody is innocent, and everyone should pay. And I thank Gordon Duff for the ideas to put this together. Gordon Duff is a Marine combat veteran, and he's a regular contributor on political and social issues. And he's with the L.A. Times or L.A. News and Vets Today. And Gordon Duff is some writer. I hope I can talk him into doing our next presentation at our meeting.
I'd like to have him on our show here.
I'll put him in touch with you.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of things. We only got a few more minutes. In your long experience, Art, is there any country that takes care of their veterans better than we do?
All of them.
Really?
All of them.
I understand the English are having similar problems, the British, rather.
Similar, but not as bad as what we have. And here's a thing that'll take only a minute. I know you're going to be impressed with this story. An airman was awarded the Air Force Cross 64 years after his mission. He died in Miami, Florida, and he's former Army Air Force Second Lieutenant Charles L. Brown, a B-17 Flying Fortress pilot, who was awarded the Air Force Cross 64 years after his historic mission over Germany. He died November 24th in 2008 in Miami at the age of 86. Burial of full military honors took place in Kendall, Florida. For extraordinary heroism during a bombing mission over Bremen, Germany, on December 20th, 1943, he was awarded the Air Force Cross, the Air Force's award for valor, second only to the Medal of Honor. During the mission, his four-engine bomber was badly damaged by German fighters in flak. He and six of his crew were wounded. After dropping his bombs over the target, they were intercepted by yet another enemy fighter. Recognizing their helpless state, the German pilot signaled Brown to land and be taken prisoner. Brown refused two such demands because his crew needed critical medical care. The chivalrous German pilot, recognizing the courage of his fellow airmen, escorted the crippled bomber to the coast, pointed a compass heading to England, and saluted his adversary. The two pilots were reunited 45 years later and became as close as brothers. The German pilot, Luftwaffe ace Franz Stigler, passed away on March 22, 2008. And this is what I call honor. Honore.
Yeah,
this is truly
like
honor.
Sounds like Baron, the Red Baron coming out of World War I. Well, we don't have that today, and it's excuse me, it's sad. I want to recommend, since you brought up Afghanistan, we got a minute or so to go.
Sure.
I did put up General Engel, the last Bengal Lancer, and I did an hour-long interview with him. He spent nearly 25, 30 years in the subcontinent, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and India.
Mm-hmm.
We got into this whole problem of Islamism and the Raj. And he said something very interesting, and it applies to Americans, that a lot of the British, they loved the country, and some of them left their bones there. And some of our people have left their bones all over the world, and we need to honor them. We got to do this again, Art.
Anytime you need me, I'm always here. Just give me a day or two notice, and we'll work something out, I'm sure.
We salute all those veterans out there who are still surviving, and I'll continue to do what I can to expose the corruption, people like Stephen Nery and Brian Foster, a U.S. Marine down in Southern California.
Yeah. And God bless all you guys. You're not forgotten, not just on Veterans Day, but never. You're never forgotten.
Yeah, and I will continue my military history series. We've got some unusual things coming up on December 7th. A guy who signed on to the USS Arizona when he was 15 years old, and he survived in San Francisco, and I'll bring that up with some videos. And also the first bombing attack on a Japanese ship. Colin P. Kelly.
You might want to repeat my telephone number and address.
Go ahead. You repeat it.
Again, the best number to reach me at if you're going by telephone is 631-474-4261. And if you're writing to me, donations are acceptable by all means. We're totally tax deductible with us. We're at Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. LTD is acceptable, abbreviated. And we're at 112 Jefferson Avenue, Port Jefferson, New York. 112 Jefferson Avenue, Port Jefferson, New York. 11777. 11777. And we appreciate hearing from you folks, and thank you for listening in tonight.
This is Peter Paul Verzella. Got to run, and this part of the show we'll repeat next week, and we'll have a 15-minute segment on Saturday, and we'll continue with our military history series. Thank you, Art, for being on the program, and we'll talk to you later.
And thank you, Peter.
And we salute all you veterans out there. This is Peter Paul Verzella for The New Shadow. Thanks for listening. Good night.